It's 2:40. One business that appears to be doing well in this recession is direct sales of beauty products from cosmetic companies such as Mary Kay and Avon. These companies provide many women with the opportunity to be their own boss in difficult times, and this has a strong appeal. Here's Gloria Hillard.
The evidence of Linda Klein's success is sitting in the front driveway of her home in a suburb of Los Angeles.
And this is a brand new pink Cadillac SUV.
And on the rear window of her 12th new pink Cadillac is the familiar sticker.
Mary Kay, enriching women's lives. And that's really our official sticker. That's our philosophy of our company, is to enrich women's lives.
In August, the company reported a more than 40% increase in new Mary Kay sales reps compared to the same month last year. Income is based on commission, so earnings vary. But Klein says a new rep working full-time can expect to earn close to $50,000 in a year. Getting that pink Cadillac, she says, takes building a sales team. And in the last 6 months, Klein and her team have signed on 60 new beauty consultants.
Mostly because they've been downsized or let go, or their whole companies have folded, actually. And we're really seeing women of all ages.
Hey, Jenny.
Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah.
So, look at your bling.
Klein is hosting her weekly training session, and soon her home is filled with energetic women who, well, sparkled.
We love pins.
Lorraine Richardson is wearing a heavy, bejeweled red blazer. She calls it Mary Kay Bling. Think rhinestone merit badges. She's 68, and after seeing her retirement savings take a dive, signed up with Mary Kay.
I would have had to go out and work. And who's going to hire somebody my age and make the money that I do? Nobody.
The Dallas-based Mary Kay is not the only direct-selling company in town.
Avon calling.
These days, you may not see Avon ladies decked out in hat and gloves on your doorstep like those iconic TV ads, but the company remains the largest direct seller of cosmetics in this country as well as worldwide.
I believe the number of lipsticks sold is 4 lipsticks per second, every second of the day.
Avon CEO Andrea Jung says beauty and personal care products are some of the last things consumers give up in recessionary times. And, as with Mary Kay, today's economy is creating an uptick in Avon's sales force.
You are your own boss, your terms, your time, flexible. You can't get laid off. You are in control of your own destiny and your own career. So I think it has a lot of resonance right now.
After losing her job in the mortgage business, 46-year-old Daphne Coleman signed up with Avon. She's making a house call today. In her hand are tiny lipstick samples.
Here you go. Take one of those. That's a new lipstick.
And Coleman set on her new career as an Avon representative. She says she won't go back to the mortgage business even when things turn around.
Avon's been around since 1886, made it through the First Depression. I mean, we're in a recession, so come on. And it's products that we need.
Meanwhile, back at the Mary Kay weekly training session, in appreciation of growing sales, Linda Klein had elaborately wrapped gifts for the women on the kitchen counter. Dinner was in the oven, and Klein led the ladies in a resounding chorus of positive thinking.
My enthusiasm makes getting lots of leads and lots of bookings easy for me.
That's true. My enthusiasm makes getting lots of leads and lots of bookings easy for me.
Women turning the word recession on its heels.
I'm increasing my sales every week.
For NPR News, I'm Gloria Hillard.
It's 2:44. This is the Afternoon Magazine. 19 degrees in Urbana. I'm Celeste Quinn. Jason Croft, our technical director. Well, the Illinois Senate impeachment trial of Governor Rob Blagojevich is set to resume in Springfield. The Senate broke for caucuses from the Democrats and the Republicans, and they are set to resume in about 20 seconds here is when they are due back. So we will go back to Illinois Public Radio and anchors Rich Bradley and Sean Crawford for our continued coverage of the impeachment trial of Governor Blagojevich. It is underway in the Illinois Senate. Today is day two. It is 2:45 Central Time.
From Illinois Public Radio in Springfield, this is live coverage of the impeachment trial of Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich in the state Senate. I'm Jenna Dooley, joined by State House Bureau Chief Sean Crawford, as we resume the broadcast of this historic event in Illinois state government. The voice of Governor Rod Blagojevich boomed through the Illinois Senate chamber as senators listened to secretly recorded conversations in which the Blagojevich appears to talk about pressuring people for campaign donations. And senators recently met to discuss questions they would raise after hearing those tapes. They should be meeting here in just a few minutes. And Sean, I'm wondering, how telling were those tapes for the senators?
Well, I think it depends on who you ask. Some seem to feel as though they were very clear in what was taking place. Of course, prosecutors have said the governor was trying to shake down a horse racing executive for a campaign contribution in exchange for action on a piece of legislation that was on the governor's desk that meant a lot of money to the horse racing industry. And that's what the phone conversations appeared to be about. But there was nothing in there that we actually heard that would enable you probably to understand that without some background knowledge. Now, all those senators, of course, are aware of the allegation, and that I think is what can make this a little bit more of a damning testimony for the governor. But right now we have we're going to be hearing from the special agent, FBI agent Daniel Kane, who's been on the stand throughout much of the day, other than when those tapes were played. He will be asked questions from senators in writing, as has been the case with this trial. And that is why the delay right now is they have gone to their respective chambers to come back in and offer up those questions. And that will be what will happen once
I'm
they do return
how
to
free
session
will he
here.
Be able to talk before it was kind of it was a paragraph. Do you agree with this statement? He would say yes. You know that's true. But can he really be talking freely to these questions?
He won't talk as freely, maybe, as another witness might. He is sort of under some orders to stay away from anything that could be detrimental to the ongoing criminal investigation, which the federal prosecutor's office in Chicago is still engaged in. I think right now what we're dealing with right now, of course, is the tapes being played, and of course the reaction to that. For those that missed those tapes, they only lasted about 6 minutes or so. There were four of them. They were what would be referred to as redacted tapes, and that means they were edited down. And so there were certain names missing out of those. Certain portions of that conversation were not there. All of that because, again, it's pertinent to that ongoing criminal investigation. But what we did hear was definitely Governor Rod Blagojevich. I think that's pretty evident to most people. And we also heard a conversation between the governor and his brother, who's also chaired his campaign fund. And then we also heard a series of conversations with the governor and a former administration official and a friend of his, Lon Monk, who is now a lobbyist and referred to as Lobbyist One. What we didn't get from that is anything that was certainly so incriminating that on its face, I think you would understand exactly what is going on if you had no background knowledge. But from what we have, you know, already read in the criminal complaint against the governor that the U.S. Attorney's Office had filed, taken in that context, it did make I do think it probably made more or was more understandable for senators who were listening to that testimony
for this
today.
Afternoon. Again, questions will go before the agent, the FBI agent, and then also testimony is supposed to be taken from House Representatives, correct?
That's right. It's going to depend on. It's going to depend on the timeline of today and how long these questions take to get answered by this special agent, FBI agent, and how long that process goes. I would assume is the situation here right now. We are waiting to get back into session and hear those questions from individual senators. And after that time, there are three different House lawmakers, and only one of them is scheduled to testify today, and that is Chapin Rose. He's from Eastern Illinois, from the Mahomet area near Champaign. And he is expected to talk a little bit about the House Impeachment Committee's report, which was put together a few weeks back now. And he will talk about a portion of that. The others will do the same thing and talk about and talk about different portions of what was included in that impeachment committee report. And, of course, that was the basis for the House's impeachment of Governor Rod Blagojevich, which, of course, triggered this Senate trial.
And as we wait for senators to return to the trial, Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich also said today that he has not ruled out legal action if he's impeached. What are his options?
Well, I'm not an attorney, but from talking with several folks about this, what we have heard, of course, is that the governor could somehow try to challenge either in state Supreme Court or at the federal level some type of argument that that the Senate rules are unfair to him, that they violate his right to due process. Many of those we've talked to don't believe that that type of argument would be successful. But again, you never know with a court. And the governor's office has sort of held off on any type of giving us any indication of something will be filed, just sort of keeping that option out there. It could come down later this week. It might not happen at all. It could happen even after a Senate vote, and we'll see what happens. But right now, the Senate trial not released. It's moving forward. Just to give a little synopsis of where we are in this process, we have now we could be through our third witness by the end of today if Chapin Rose, the state representative, does testify, and that would enable us to basically say we have roughly, I think, about a half dozen or so other people who would be coming to the witness stand, and maybe they would not take quite as long to go through their testimony. You never know on that, but we would have the state auditor general. We would also have the person who heads up the state's Joint Commission on Administrative Rules. We'd also have a college professor who's a constitutional expert coming in, and then also a few other House lawmakers. After that time, it could get down to the point of a Senate vote, and some feel as that could come as early, maybe as Thursday, or certainly by Friday. So by the end of this week, this process might be completed.
And as we wait, when that Senate vote comes down, and if the governor is removed from office, where is Lieutenant Governor Pat Quinn in all of this? What would happen? How soon would things happen where he would be sworn in?
Well, that's something that I think is still a bit up in the air. Without a doubt, I think Lieutenant Governor Pat Quinn does understand what the role of what the line of succession is in state government. And if something did happen in which the governor was actually removed from office, he, of course, would take over. And at this point, from everything I have seen and heard from the lieutenant governor's office, he would be in a position to assume his role. The question, of course, in everybody's mind has been, well, if something happens, if you move the governor out of his office, if you remove him from office, does the lieutenant governor immediately assume the role, even if he hasn't taken the oath of office yet? And, you know, that's debatable among different people I've talked to. But again, I don't think there would be much of a delay there. I think they are prepared for that. I think everybody understands the gravity of this situation and the importance of the keeping state government operating and having somebody in place. And I think that that's where Lieutenant Governor Pat Quinn probably understands that as well as anybody. Just as we wait here, Amanda Vinicky has been covering the trial this morning for us, and she has joined us as well. And she can talk just a moment about what the mood has been today, because yesterday it started out certainly in the Senate chamber as people, I think, anticipating this to get going. This has been out there for so long. We knew that it was probably going to get to a Senate trial. It finally began yesterday. And then today, of course, these tapes were played. Even though they didn't last that long, we did get to hear that. And that certainly, I think, created a bit of a murmur throughout the chamber today.
Most certainly. You know, and here we go. I think that you do have senators very interested in these tapes, and it's going to be interesting to hear now these questions that people have for the FBI agent, though his testimony is expected to be limited. The tapes were really what everyone was wanting to hear. There have been, we know what the governor has said in part. The conversations were transcribed in the criminal complaint, but this is the first time they've been heard, the governor's own words. So
go ahead and do that.
Now we rejoin the trial. Again, questions from individual senators to FBI Special Agent Daniel Keene.
Set up each call. As you can see at the beginning of each transcript, there is the case number, which is, of course, the case number of United States versus Blagojevich. and then it indicates where the interception took place. For example, the first call will be the Rod Blagojevich home. Then there will be a date and a time. So this first call, again, is from the home telephone of Rod Blagojevich, and the parties are identified as Robert Blagojevich and Rod Blagojevich.
And again, we may be hearing the tapes once again.
How are we doing? Good. Talked to Lon, and he says Johnny Johnson's good for it.
Okay.
He's going to give you, no, he didn't get it, but he's, you know, I'm good for it. I got to just decide what accounts to get it out of. And Lon's going to talk to you about some sensitivities legislatively tonight when he sees you with regard to timing of all of this.
Right, before the end of the year, though, right?
Oh, yeah. So there was no waffling there. It's just a, you know, we just got to figure it out. And so he'll give you the specific details.
Well, good, he's going to be there tonight, right?
He's going with you. It's a basketball game?
Yeah, with us.
He knew it was United Center. Wasn't sure what the venue was, but good.
Okay, so, but clearly before the end of the year, right?
Yeah.
He's down there right now with him lobbying on a bill.
He was with him last night, and he's still down there.
Yeah, they're pushing a bill, so that's probably what he wants to wait on.
Well, whatever. I mean, I think that's probably likely. He didn't get into detail with me.
Okay, and the second phone call in the transcript and that you'll be hearing is from the cellular telephone of Lobbyist 1. This is on December 3rd, 2008, at the hour of 2:21 p.m. That's all at the top of this transcript, as you can see. And the parties are Lobbyist 1 and John Johnston.
Hello.
John, how are you?
Lon.
Good.
How are you? Checking in.
I didn't know you called.
Oh, yeah, I left a message earlier today.
Yeah. Where are you right now?
I'm at the track.
Can I come see you?
Can you come see me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll be there probably about 45 minutes.
Okay.
Okay, and the next phone call, again from the cell phone of Lobbyist 1, the same date, approximately an hour and 50 minutes later at the hour of 4:11 p.m. The parties are Lobbyist 1 and Rod Blagojevich.